Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to the Wrestling Arena. I'm your host, Paul Barrow, and on today's show, we'll be discussing AEW's Forbidden Door pay-per-view, the importance or lack thereof of five-star matches, and the upcoming Money in the Bank pay-per-view from WWE live from the London O2 this Saturday at 8 p.m. UK time. I had intended to do a prediction show for Forbidden Door, but I made the mistake of waiting until Collision was over on Saturday night, which is obviously more Sunday morning for us in the UK. And by the time I'd slept and woke up and prepared the show, there was just not enough time for it to be of any use. Like, my predictions would have been out maybe half an hour before the show, and that didn't seem like enough time to make my predictions worth it for you guys. I apologise for missing that out. It was an important show, and I consider that a lesson learned. I will probably be getting up my predictions shows a little earlier, and if that means the cards aren't quite complete because they've announced, another match on the last show, then that'll have to be it. It'll just have to be a kind of compromise I come to, because otherwise it means you're just not going to get prediction shows. And speaking of Forbidden Door, what a show it was. There were some tremendous matches on there, and I don't really want to go through everything because there was only so many ways you can say, wow, this was a good match. Wow, this was a good match. There wasn't really any storyline stuff going on. We did get the heel turn of Jack Perry on Hook, so that's one thing. That was pretty cool. And obviously there were sort of matches between the two big matches, which were Omega versus Ospreay and Danielson versus Okada. They've sort of left themselves open to doing rematches, which I suppose in a way is a sort of storyline. But there isn't really, with them being only one show a year, there isn't really a continuous narrative to go through with the New Japan stars and AEW. They're just a series of quote-unquote dream matches. CM Punk got what I expect to be his now usual reception. He was heavily booed as well as cheered. And you could put that down to being in Canada and that being the home country of Kenny Omega. But I do think, the company's called All Elite Wrestling. There are a lot of Elite fans out there, and I do think that Punk is going to be seen as the heel. And he played up to it during all the TV tapings, and that seems to be the direction they're going. Now, the two major matches of this card were Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay and Bryan Danielson versus Kazuchika Okada. They were both highly anticipated, with many calling Kenny Omega versus Will Ospreay 2 a five-star match. Now, one of my friends pointed out that if it is a five-star match, as rated by Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer, that Will Ospreay will actually have more five-star matches under his belt than Mitsuharu Misawa in a far shorter career. Now, I'm not some guy that thinks that five-star matches are the be-all and end-all of professional wrestling, especially because they're only really one guy's opinion. Admittedly, a guy that's been writing about professional wrestling for a long time, and he's even held in some regard by at least a portion of the wrestling fan base. Even the Young Bucks finisher is called the Meltzer Driver, and, AEW came about due to a bet with Dave Meltzer that Cody Rhodes and the Young Bucks had. So it is impossible to say he doesn't have some kind of influence. And what this made me think of was my days when I first discovered the tape trading scene, and hearing about a five-star match was an event. You'd have to see that match. You'd have to buy that VHS tape that somebody had got hold of and made a zillion copies of, and you were getting copies of it through the post, and it looked like you were getting, much dodgier stuff through the post than professional wrestling, but that's just how it was back in the day. You'd find printouts in the back magazines that were we've got this company for this year, and we've got the events, so if you want them, you've got to get in touch with us, and we'll send you blank VHS tapes. It was very strange looking back on it, especially when you consider that now you can get any match, pretty much, from any promotion, if you know what you're doing or you know where you're looking. The entire WWE and the WWF, WCW, ECW catalogue is just available at the touch of a button, a literal touch of a button. And if you'd have told me that back in even 1999, I'd have been like, that's crazy, what do you mean? Off the internet, I bet those videos are really small because it was all on Real Player back in the day and stuff like that. And I was really thinking, does a five-star match have the kind of weight that it used to carry? I mean, I personally don't think it was quite five stars. There were a couple of things about it that I just thought were just a bit too much. As usual, I thought it went too far. The Toga Driver 91 looked very cool, but I thought it sets a bad precedent to me, because you didn't need it, because that crowd were already incredibly hot. They were just like completely crazily hot, and I mean, fair play for doing it. It looked awesome, but it didn't raise anything. It just made you go, "Ooh, someone's probably broken their neck there." And I'm sure Kenny knows what he's doing. He was probably doing neck stretches for weeks beforehand and stuff like that. And I'm not saying, oh, they shouldn't do it. They know how to work. They obviously do. They were getting tremendous reactions. But it's all about raising the bar of what is needed to be done. I mean, there was a kick out of that screwdriver spot. And I think the screwdriver spots are getting ridiculous anyway. I think the screwdriver is a ridiculous weapon. But now you've got someone who's kicked out of the screwdriver. And all I can think of is in TNA, Abyss had a 2x4 with nails sticking out of it that if he actually hit anybody with it would have killed someone. And I'm just worried that you're going to get to the point where in order for some top guy to lose, it's going to have to be a ridiculous weapon. As I said, I thought the screwdriver was ridiculous anyway. But maybe I'm just old man shouting at clouds. I thought it was a solid 4, 4.5 star match. I just thought it was a little long. I didn't like the Tiger Driver personally, and I didn't like the screwdriver spot kick out. If you're going to use the screwdriver, have the guy lose, because you've established that that's your killer weapon. That's your Triple H's sledgehammer. And now it's got to be something else for a top guy to lose, because you can guarantee, you're like, well, Kenny kicked out of it. In order to look on Kenny's level, I've got to kick out of it. And I think that's a bad thing to do. Don't get me wrong, I'm not one of these weirdos that say, no, they can't work. I'm really not. It just wasn't the be-all and end-all that the internet wrestling community, shall we say, has already placed it on for the year. That's already going to be match of the year, according to most people. And we're getting to the point where, you know, it's 6 months through the year. That will probably be on a lot of people's lists, if not number one. And that's up to them. It's not like I'm not looking forward to number three, which I think will either be at Wrestle Kingdom in January, or it could be at Wembley. Because Ospreay said on Twitter, if you want to do it again, I know a good spot. And again, my friends were like, that's got to be Wembley. He's British. And I'm like, well, he's also entrenched in New Japan Pro Wrestling. That could be his spot. I thought that Danielson and Okada did very well. They had to deal with a burnt-out crowd, which is another reason why I don't think, if you're not the main event, the last match, don't go so hard. I get that you want to try and steal the show, but if you're going to go 5 hours or whatever the hell it was, and I like long shows, I've been on record saying I like long shows, but this was burnt out. And I get that you want to get all the New Japan talent on there because it's a one time a year show, but they're all the same kind of match. They're all strong style matches. So there's very little variety in the wrestling itself. There was a lot of trading chop spots and all that kind of thing. And one thing I'll say about WWE is they tend not to stack up a show with the same kind of thing at the moment. You know, they're not doing Fatal 4-Way, their pay-per-view with 4 Fatal 4-Way matches on it and things like that. And I think, hopefully, they're not going to do that again for a long time. I mean, it is rumoured that Vince is slowly worming his way back into creative, and Triple H and the rest of the creative team are trying desperately to not let it happen. When it comes to Forbidden Door, as good as it was, and it was good, I really enjoyed it. Once you'd seen Ospreay versus Omega, you could have gone home. You really could have done, because there was no topping that. The crowd were not going to get as hot. I mean, we even got the final countdown for Bryan Danielson's entrance. And even that got a big reaction, don't get me wrong, and it was very cool. But even that didn't get the crowd as hot as any part of the Kenny Ospreay match. I mean, it's led me to think, and this is a particular problem with AEW, that you might want to pace out your cards better. And by your cards, I don't mean just like only have so many matches, but think about it. That Danielson match with Okada could have been saved till next year. There were too many massive matches on that card. And I get it, it's an embarrassment of riches, what are you complaining about? But it leads to these really long cards that just wear you out. And yeah, okay, you know, it was New Japan, Forbidden Door, so you've only got one of those a year. But personally, I might start thinking about doing them every 6 months, because they are making a lot of money, then they're getting exposure for New Japan, so New Japan are happy about it. Apparently, it made a lot of money, so maybe you want to increase the number of those. And yes, they're less special, but it means you haven't just cramming everyone, and I mean everyone, onto the one show. But anyway, that's enough about me complaining about great wrestling, and I guess you're really here to hear my predictions for WWE's Money in the Bank. Now, I haven't been too impressed with the build-up for a lot of this stuff, to be honest. WWE's fault sort of... it's good stuff, but there's been no, oh my god, that's great, that's a great angle, I can't wait to see that. But on the other side of the coin, there are genuinely some matches that I'm not sure what's going to happen, which is always a great thing going into a pay-per-view, and that, combined with what I'm assuming will be a very, very hot crowd, should mean that we're in for a good night of professional wrestling. Now, I have said that this card contains some very difficult to predict matches, but the first one I'm going to talk about is not one of them. We have Matt Riddle versus Gunther, and Gunther's very close to breaking the Honky Tonk Man's Intercontinental Championship record, and I cannot see him losing it, and until at least he does. And personally, I hope he holds on to it for a long time. Gunther's also very, very impressive to watch at all times. He carries himself like a champion. He's great to watch. And I think someone beating him should be treated as a huge event. I think it'll be good. These two have faced each other a lot in, say, progress, I think. But I do see Matt Riddle not coming out on top. Now, the next most predictable match on this card for me, and people might disagree with me here, and let me know if you do, at PM Barrow on Twitter, is Cody Rhodes versus Dominic Mysterio. Now, I think Dominic's going to win this because Cody's going to be attacked by Brock Lesnar. So it's either going to be a Dominic victory or a DQ. It's possible for to do a DQ, but I think if they give Dominic a victory, that is something he can crow about for a long time. He can also run that back on Raw in a cage match, in a classic, you know, babyface cage match. But I think it's all but inevitable that we get Brock here in some fashion. Next, we've got Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler versus Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez for the WWE Women's Tag Team Championships. Now, I know what you're thinking. You might think that they'd have Liv and Raquel win to do a title change on the show and create a big moment. I think those big moments are already handled by the Money in the Bank ladder matches already happening. And I also think that if you're going to kind of rehabilitate this division, which it sorely needs, then you're going to need to provide some stability. I think there's a good chance that they retain, that being Ronda and Shayna, because they're a group of friends. They've wanted to do this for ages. It's been on kind of Ronda's bucket list for a while of what she wants to do. And while her star power has definitely faded, she just now seems like another member of the roster. I'm pretty sure she's still going to get some sway backstage because she used to be a more mainstream star. So I still see the MMA besties retaining the championships in what I might think would be a possibly a quick match in order to establish some dominance. Bit of a shame for the baby faces here, but I can't see it really. I mean, Liv's very popular, but to me, you keep it on Ronda and Shayna. They've got that kind of group. They're already a faction, a formation. They look impressive. I just think keeping them as champion for a while and building a division around them would actually be quite good. Next, for the World Heavyweight title, we've got Finn Balor versus the champion, Seth Rollins. Now, Finn is obviously a local boy, and the Judgment Day remain very, very popular, very, very pushed act in WWE. So you might be forgiven for thinking that this might be a title change, but I'm still thinking that Seth Rollins has got some steam left in the tank. He's still going to be able to claim to be world champion at the end of this. It'll be a good match, probably even a great match. Actually, this might be match of the night if they can get on the same page. But to me, I still see Seth walking away with the championship. This isn't the time to give it to Finn, you have to establish that belt, and I can't see them swapping it just yet. I still think they're going to think that the Money in the Bank briefcase matches and the Lesnar appearance that I'm predicting are going to be big enough moments to say, this is a big show, you should have come to the big show. I think that the championship will stay on Seth for that reason. You don't need to change the belt for it to be a big moment, to consider for the crowd to go home and think that was worth going to. I don't think the championship is going to change. Next, we have the Bloodline Civil War match, which is Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa versus the Usos. I see the Usos beating the remains of the Bloodline with Jay pinning Solo Sikoa. I think that gives Jay some momentum going towards SummerSlam, where I think it's going to be Roman versus Jay for the title. You can have Roman say, I didn't get beat, which will be factually true if nothing else. You can have him get mad at Solo, which can start the final crumbling of their little group, because I fully expect by SummerSlam, Roman to be all on his own, or, well, Roman and Paul Heyman to be on their own, shall we say. I think that's the way you give people the most hope that Jay is going to beat him. Then in the first of our two Money in the Bank ladder matches, we've got Zelina Vega versus Becky Lynch versus Zoe Stark versus Bayley versus Io Sky versus Trish Stratus. Now, there's several ways they could go through this match, but to my mind, you've got Becky Lynch and Zoe Stark and Trish Stratus are already in a program with each other. I don't think any of them are going to win. They're all going to... Well, Becky's going to be stopped by Zoe Starks and Trish is going to be taken out by Becky earlier. Then you've got Bayley and Io Sky who are in damage control. And you've got Zelina. I don't think they'll give it to Zelina. I think they've realised that Io Sky is ready to get some kind of a push. She's had... Crowds have been behind her. That crowd in Puerto Rico was behind her. She's very, very good. I think it's her time. I think damage control has run its course. But she should get the belt. She should be a constant threat. They should keep the belt for more than, say, 3 days or a week, because the women's title has got a disturbing habit of just being wasted. Like, there's never any kind of... I suppose that 1 year, it wasn't their fault, you know. Becky Lynch was pregnant. But it's about time we had, you know, the women's Money in the Bank briefcase holder hold the briefcase for a while and be that kind of, well, when are they going to pass it in? Because usually it's within a day, it's within a week, it's on the same show, and it ends up being a mess. And finally, in our men's Money in the Bank, we have Ricochet versus Shinsuke Nakamura versus LA Knight versus Santos Escobar versus Butch versus Damian Priest versus Logan Paul. Now, a lot of people might sit there and think, well, they've announced Logan Paul for that match, so he's definitely going to win. And there is some merit to that. I can certainly see them doing that. Logan Paul is, you know, he's a YouTube sensation. He's got a lot of... He gets media attention. And I can see them giving him the Money in the Bank briefcase. But on the other hand, you've got people like... LA Knight is very popular. He's there every week, so his consistency is going to be much more than Logan Paul. And I also think that Damian Priest stands a really good chance of getting hold of that briefcase with Finn Balor. They love the Judgment Day, so I can see him fight. If he gets the briefcase, that gives the Judgment Day a little more focus, gives them something to boast about. And after the show in Puerto Rico Backlash, there were people saying that Damian Priest was going to get a big, big push because of the company valued how good he was in that match and how he's really upped his game, and he was going to be seen as a top guy. So it could be that you give it to him. Unfortunately, I don't see Butch getting it. I don't see Santos Escobar getting it. And I don't see Ricochet or Shinsuke Nakamura getting it. But for me, it really is between three people, which makes a hell of a change, because usually it's between one person. But I think if you give it to LA Knight... There's some great interviews he cuts from that. I think if you get to Damian Priest, it cements him as a top guy. And I can see why you might give it to Logan Paul. I'm hoping they give it to LA Knight. I think LA Knight's got a massive upside, but he's not getting any younger. You don't necessarily have to have him go for a world title, even though anybody that gets the briefcase should always go for a world title. But they could give it to Logan Paul to have him go against Seth again, like they'd, like, you know, a Mania rematch. I still hope LA Knight gets it, and I like Damian Priest, but this isn't it for him. I think he needs to establish himself in the US ranks first and do the whole, I've been a tag champion, I know he's already been the US champion, but I think if you give him the whole, I've won all the belts apart from the world belt, then I think that's the way to go for him. But LA Knight, he's kind of a boastful babyface. Having him trick out that that briefcase with, I don't know, a custom paint job, I think he can really go for it. So yeah, my pick isn't what I hope. I actually do think they're going to go Logan Paul, but my hope is for LA Knight. And that is my predictions for Money in the Bank. I'm hoping for a good show. I'm sure it will be. But that's the end of the show for this week. I'll be back soon with Turner Years. Dave is still waiting for time off work. He got promoted and they didn't hire anyone to do his old job. So now he's doing two people's jobs. So he's very short on free time. But every time we talk, we're like, we've got to get back to Turner Years. We love doing it. And we know you guys love hearing it. So it is still in the works. It's just taking some time for him to figure out his schedule. I'll obviously be back next week to talk about this show and to talk about anything else that's happened in the world of professional wrestling. For the Wrestling Arena, I've been Paul Barrow, and I'll see you next time.